Oh,
who did that happen to?
Yeah, what's this amazing circumstance?
To forge the narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. I'm joined now by Red Powell.
Hello.
And Adam Camilleri.
Hello.
Yo, we are the Ball of Souls podcast. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for tuning in every week. I mean, we're coming to the year end, and I really want to say that I appreciate everyone tuning in each and every week, leaving those reviews and comments and the likes, shares, and all that kind of stuff. It means a whole lot. I know this has been a really trying year for folks, and we're not stopping putting out episodes. There's going to be one each and every week coming right to your ear holes and your podcast aggregators, but I just wanted to say thanks.
Well said. I can't thank people enough as well. The support and people still tuning in, even though there's, you know, there isn't the most to talk about. I think there's an assumption that G-Dub's working behind the eight ball for most of this year, seeing as what's gone down in Britain and their production side of things. So yeah, I mean, it's just awesome that people have stayed so engaged and want to still be so closely aligned to what's going on in the community very little going on in the community.
Well, yeah, it's been a tough year for events. And that brings me... So on this episode, we're going to talk about the Las Vegas Nopen. Really excited about that. Have a special vendor spotlight segment from one of the main sponsors of the show. Tune in for that, and thanks for all the people that have supported Jay and Discount Games over the course of this year as well. You know, it's been in all your local game stores too. It's a real, you know, it's a challenging year, and we won't beat that up. But I know that everyone that you could support, even if it's just listening and liking things, has really appreciated it. Really, probably helped keep a lot of people going this year. Mm-hmm. But so let's talk about the Las Vegas Nopen. By the time that you hear this, there may be some information out on the web, and I will certainly put the link in the show notes. But the stream team from the Las Vegas Open 2020, can you believe it?
That was this year.
This year. Yeah. This year. Man.
What? Ridiculous.
Yeah. So we teamed up and we've contacted some folks all around the hobby and the streamosphere to do a completely social distanced, completely COVID compliant, safe stream event. We're titling the Las Vegas Nopen, to where 16 list, and I'll explain that in a second, will compete for the top bracket, the top prize. The prize of a healthy attaboy, I think all it is right now. But we're going to be streaming over the course of the last weekend in January. We're going to have a charity cause that we'll list more information about. And that's it. Yeah. I mean, Adam?
Yeah. Well, so me and you were lucky enough to be the head commentators for the alternative LVO stream last year, the one that wasn't on the G-Dub side of things. We had the amazing Tony, Peter, Val all propping us up. So, I mean, you could do what we were doing. And it was a ride. And the boys were just like, hey, there's nothing on this year. What can we do about that? And I'm unfortunately, we couldn't put it on the exact same weekend as the LVO, because unfortunately I had prior commitments. There's quite a large event in Australia going on, and I'm either playing in it or streaming it, depending on how good the internet's going to be. But so we put it on the weekend after, and we had this idea to make a homogenous 16 list events, like a semi knockout. And so everyone, so we're gonna have people from all over the world, a lot of big content creators, a lot of top name players, people who would be attending the LVO, and we told them build a list of what you would have taken to the LVO this year based on the information we have right now, e.g., you know, the Marines are very good, Sisters are very good, Necrons are very good, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We're going to run that. We're going to run that theory and see what comes out as the best list, because technically, well, we can't say for sure, because, of course, all the players aren't there and they don't have 1,000 players of like-minded skill set to go through. But it's going to be interesting to see what comes out on top. I've got a couple of assumptions based on the players more than anything else.
Well, let me tell you who's involved in this.
Super excited.
Yeah, so we've got, of course, you know, the folks 40K Assassin that we just mentioned, and us doing commentary for the whole weekend. We're also be joined by Art of War Down Under, Play on Tabletop, The Art of War, Tabletop Titans, Hellstorm Wargaming, possibly Vanguard Tactics, and the list will go on. We'll continue to update the list as we have it, as we get closer to the January 29th weekend. And so the lists are going to be built. There'll be 16 lists that will bracket them off. I think we'll put up a challenge bracket where people can make their own brackets and see which one may filter down to the top. But with the list, the winning list from each round will advance to compete against the next winning list, so on and so forth. Mm. But they may not be played against the same people. And we're still organizing the logistics of this, but I really want to see to where the creators of the list, they are able to collaborate with the player, the pilot of the list in the next round, if it doesn't happen to be something from their stream team. And what I mentioned about this being COVID safe is that everyone social distances. These streamers that have been streaming together, living together, cohabiting together in their own little bubbles are going to be still existing in that way and streaming from there. We're not going to have any cross mingling between bubbles or anything like that. We're going to do this. And then, of course, we're going to be commentating and organizing remotely. So nowhere near each other. So this is as safe as we can absolutely make it.
Yeah, so if picture it like this. So we've got, said the Tabletop Titans guys are involved. Let's say Adrian and Brian both write a list. Let's say they both get knocked out, but their lists, continue, etc. You could have Siegler playing Nanavati in their house in Florida, playing Brian Siegler's list versus Adrian's list, that kind of stuff. Maybe not that exactly, because they're going to play each other and one of them's going to get knocked out before the other. So maybe not both, but that's the kind of theory behind it. You can have two top level players or top content creators playing lists from some other person, because that list just continues and could pick up momentum and get better and better and better. And naturally, people can't travel. We're not going to be asking people to break or make any of this portion unsafe, especially seeing as we want to be conscientious members of the community. But yeah, I just think it's an amazing initiative. Really happy to be involved and can't wait for it, man.
Yeah, we have full support of Frontline Gaming and the Las Vegas Open Crew, which is also very nice. And I think this is going to be something we can look forward to and have fun with. I mean, that's it. We're going to be, think of all the various challenges that are going to come up during this with all the technology, but then they can listen to us jibber jab and interact with us in the chat, and it's going to be fun.
Absolutely right. On top of that, we're going to try and see how much attention we can get from GW, because naturally, this might be jumping ahead of things. There usually is a bunch of releases that happen every year at LVO. It would be sick to have something to show from J-Dub at this event.
All the possibilities are in front of us. We know we can do it. We've got the technology. We have the will. It's going to be fun. And tune in. More info will be in the show notes. You can go to the Las Vegas Nopen, NOPEN.net, as the main website, and you'll see some information about the partners and the schedule and the charity we're going to be supporting. You might be able to get a t-shirt coming soon. TBD.
And surely, even if you don't like the content creators or the content, or it's not something you're interested in the streaming, surely you can get involved just because the name is freaking amazing.
It is. It's cool. But this is we didn't want this anniversary of us coming together to do that, to go unmentioned, uncelebrated. So what a better way to do it than doing, a COVID safe reunion.
Yeah, I just think it's going to be incredible. It, no matter what happens. And I know all the content creators we've reached out to, because we've reached out to a bunch. They're all just amazing people. They're all willing to contribute and be part of the community and do their best to give people something to enjoy at the end of the year. Well, start of a new year, to be honest.
Yep. So hobby updates. I have no hobby updates.
You're not going to complain about the Silent King again?
Complete
people's bingo cards. 4 weeks of, or it'd be 5 weeks of Silent King complaints.
The Silent King is done and out the door. Very happy customer.
Brilliant.
Yeah. He actually did say, he's like, I don't know if I like these. These things are supposed to be Blackstone. I was like, well, here's some paint. Knock yourself out.
Thanks, mate. All right. Jeez.
I didn't, of course. I was like, man, we do whatever you want. That's got to match us. I said, but take it home, put it next to your whole army, and then if you don't like it, we'll change it. No big deal.
So on my end, man, it's nice for some folks with the holidays. There has been historically a lot of travel and whatnot, and so you feel like sometimes the scene of the hobby feels like it kind of slows down, and rightfully so, because your priorities are vacation and getting around to see the family and whatnot. But of course, it's a little different this time around, and unfortunately, I mean, my family, we had plans to head out and see folks and whatnot, but that didn't happen necessarily. And so I admit, you know, with work and kind of shut down with the holidays, I've got quite a schedule ahead of me. There's quite a bit of hobbying I can get done, and I'm looking forward to it. My son is at that, just getting into that right age. You know, we were talking about stuff. He's been reading those Warhammer adventure books. I don't know.
Good,
have you got?
Man.
Yeah, yeah. He likes them a lot.
The 40, I like the 40K better than the Sigmar ones, but
he does too. Yeah. He does too. And of course, I only have so much Sigmar stuff, and most of it is like Cornate. So he hasn't. I admit I haven't gone through and shown him like my mountain of skulls, like doused in blood and stuff. but he is like, you know what's cool is that, so I've got, he's been using my Space Marines, and so he relates a lot of that stuff through the Warhammer adventures and the Necrons, right? And so like I'm explaining to him like how the Necrons get back up, and he's like, oh, in the book they did that, they got back, they just kept coming. And I was like, yeah, it's crazy how you're reading Warhammer adventures and these Necrons aren't just the most terrifying thing ever. But I'm really glad that it's socializing. Like he's getting to see that material at that level where it's not like the, you know, you go pick up the grim dark 40K core rulebook and it's like immediately jumps to like the Necron flayed ones or something like that, and it's not like that's definitely not in Warhammer Adventures. And yeah. So it's really funny to see kind of the gap to it, but it's really cool at the same time getting to talk to my son about it, because so he also read like the Gene Stealer Cult one, and that's another one of those things that like you're like, wow, that could be really terrifying. Yeah, you kind of put in perspective of stuff, but yet he's like, oh no, I think he's like, yeah, the Space Marines took care of them too. I was like, yeah, that sounds about right. The game's not too far removed.
Red, how old's your son?
He is about to turn 9, and so it's, you know, what's really cool is so we do some we've been doing school at home, and so he's got these creative writing projects, and I'm like, hey man, we should consider some, like, because it is kind of a chore for him to write some stuff. And I was like, well, what if we write some 40K stuff? And you know what was really cool is he turned around and he's like, I think I should know a little more about the backstory of 40K before I can write stuff. And I was like, well, you know, we don't have to limit ourselves, but I was really excited to hear my soon-to-be 9-year-old son like, you know, I think I should know more about this 40K stuff. It was like, oh man, how long do you have? Oh, you have the next 9 years that you're stuck with.
Get him to like, share, and subscribe to our podcast.
yeah, there you go.
That's cool though. My youngest, he indulges me and lets me read. He reads very well and can read on his own, but he lets me read those to him.
Man, you know, and just a slight tangent, but that's awesome. I think there's a lot to be communicated in reading stuff to folks, you know, and my son's a big fan of audiobooks too, but I've been reading to him. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but the Dragonlance books.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I'm reading Dragonlance to my kids right now, and they are, it's a ride.
Going just through the first 6, or are you all in the expanded novels and stuff?
So I have them, but my intention is to just read the first 6 to them, because I think it's a great story arc across the board. We've got a lot of other stuff to read. We've read Star Wars, and now we're reading this, and we've read The Hobbit before. I think we need to get to the Lord of the Rings and whatnot. But so we're still in the first book right now, just from where I started with it, and we're about to jump into the second book. They're extremely excited. They love it.
No spoilers, but I am totally reignited about Star Wars. Like, no spoilers.
Me too.
You know, people are going to know why. I'm not, like, you're in your car or you're at your computer. Yes, I'm right there with you. Yes. But I also, speaking of reading, though, I've got the original novelizations of the first 3 movies that I've had forever, you know, from back in the day. And it just dawned on me. I was like, I want to go back and read them, or at least read the section. I want to read the section of Han and Greedo. I want to read how that went down in the book, you know, that was written before the movie came out.
Oh man. So I actually have that, like, so you can, I picked up that book essentially. It's the, you know, the 3 episodes more or less from Barnes and Noble. And that's, I'll have to go back and double check that for you, because I'm pretty sure.
No, I did it. I broke it out and I read it. And,
oh, nice.
Yeah. It's not even Han shot first. Han is the only guy that shot. He just shot and then got up and walked away.
I do love that part of the community. They're trying to argue that Han's a good dude. The whole point of the story is that he was an absolute asshole to start with, and he came good. And he came really good.
Savvy and potentially selfish, you know, and a survivor kind of thing, and looking out for himself, you know, and and that's why at the end of, I call it Star Wars, but A New Hope, when he shows up, you know, as a kid, you don't actually know that he was coming back.
Yeah, because they did such a good job of making him feel like he was so self-centered and he was just in it for the money. And then when he comes back, you're like, wow, that's the greatest.
It is.
And
the
then when you start Empire, and he's still there. It's been years now since that happened, and he stayed the course. And he's got such a huge bounty on his head that he's constantly looking over his shoulder, but he's doing it anyway because he knows it's right.
Yeah. So in the book also, there's, you know, that deleted scene, or maybe you have, maybe at this point in time, there's a deleted scene to where Han is talking to Jabba in A New Hope before he's like, Jabba is there with the bounty hunters before he gets on the Falcon the first time. That was cut from the movie and then later put back in, and like Jabba was edited over the actor that played him and stuff. But that scene is in the book as well. Man, it's neat. It's kind
of
neat.
So that's got me thinking. What was the first piece of like nerd lore you guys consumed? consumed yourself, as in you went out and you did it off your own bat. It wasn't because you sat down and watched Star Wars with your parents or anything like that.
I don't know the first. Like I know that I was into, like, I got exposed to the D&D Monster Manual. And I knew I needed to know more about D&D. And so I think I sought out one of my uncle's collections of what he had of D&D at the time. But I think the first novel, like not Lord of the Rings, not Hobbit type novel that I bought, was the the second book of the Icewind Dale trilogy. I didn't know I was buying the second book, but I got the second book and then went back and read the first book. That's that is now the Dritz trilogy, but it wasn't just about Dritz. But I remember buying that in like a Kmart or something.
Yeah, that's cool. I've never heard of that one. I might have to look it up.
Oh my gosh, Adam.
I know.
Not only there's a little bit. Here it comes, Adam. I'm going to slide it in. Not only is there an app out there that you can get all of the 40K rules, There's this massive entire world in the Forgotten Realms of D&D that has written by R.A. Salvatore on Dritz Doerden that you need to pick up and read. I'm more offended about this than I am about the app right now.
And I can't remember if I read Dragonlance before that or after that. I can't remember where it fell, but Dragonlance, I didn't get the Dragonlance individual books for the Chronicles. I got the omnibus, like all three books were in one, so it had to have been after the original printings.
Yeah.
And then I got the Legends in the original three book format.
Does this mean I can get the app now, seeing as we've got a new meme to move on to?
No. You've got about a week to at least pick up the first R.A. Salvatore book before I start petitioning Paul to let you go.
Fair, okay. Those during Christmas books. Jeez, give me to the end of the year.
Oh man, no, hold on. What's your I'm gonna do this. What's your PayPal? I'm about to give you the $8 it costs to buy this book and read it.
Are you getting to go the Crystal Shard or the Icewind Dale trilogy, or are you going to the homelands like Dritz?
No, I think it's important you start with the Icewind Dale trilogy and then go to the Dritz like origin stuff, kind of like going backwards like with the Star Wars stuff. I think that it's better to do that personally because you don't have all that context, and then it's kind of eye opening to see that stuff later. I'm sorry, Adam. I know like this is out, you know, but I really feel like
it's only a 30-year-old book, you know, you'd be all right.
Man,
that's exciting.
You haven't read Lord of the Rings.
I've read Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that I like The Hobbit more because I was in a different place when I read it.
Yeah,
which might hurt some feelings.
No, that's fair. That's fair.
Hobbit, and they're great stories. And like with there's a lot of walking in Lord of the Rings. Like this is legitimate.
I don't think I was on my ADHD medication when I read the Lord of the Rings, but I was when I read The Hobbit. And I was like, I really don't care about Tom Bombadil's belt buckle. For the love of God, Mr. Tolkien, I do not care.
Tom is so cool, Mr. Bombadil.
He's cool, but his belt buckle, it does not add anything to the story in any freaking way.
Fair enough.
You'd be surprised. You'd be surprised.
I think Tom Bombadil is the last surviving member of the last. He's like Galactus in Marvel. He is the last survivor from a previous universe.
Man, I tell you what. That makes sense. Not only that, but I mean, he's a personification of hope and optimism in a world that really, when you put into consideration, like, I mean, you talk about the hero's journey and you talk about how cool some of the stuff in Star Wars is, and Star Wars, used to be essentially like the staple of the hero's journey in a lot of ways. But Tolkien just took that stuff to the next level, especially given how much of, you know, World War II he intertwined into it. It's just
That's what I was about to say. I always kind of, when I was old enough to know the context of when Lord of the Rings was written and the influences it had, I really thought of guys like Tom Bombadil and Gandalf as the, you know, the guiding hand of humanity, trying to guide us towards, you know, the right path away from destruction and pain and misery. And I always cling to that. I like that a lot.
We are so far away from 40K right now, but not that far. Not that far.
Not that far. What was my first real influence I reached out for was the Narnia books. Maybe it's a generational.
Yeah. Do those count? Because I definitely read Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe and Silver Chair and all that kind of stuff. Okay.
Yeah. I jumped onto those. I think I read those definitely before I was in my teens, like before the age of 10, I'd read that entire series. And that was kind of my first venture. I literally have never put down a book since. I've been kind of consistently reading a novel since I picked up those books when I was a kid. That's how big an influence they had on me. But yeah, I think it's just amazing to find out how people kind of got their start in the communities and things that they still cling to into their adult life.
Yeah, I mean, so I'll jump to my origin of lore and whatnot, but you know, C.S. Lewis and Tolkien were like best friends, right?
Yeah.
Like it's just amazing that those two authors were in such proximity to each other that it's inevitable the influence that they had upon one another, that just how good the Narnia stuff is, Paul. Like I totally, Adam, for that to be like your base and platform from which you feel like you started from, like I makes 100% sense, because C.S. Lewis is just such an amazing author that if you check outside of even the Narnia material, I'm floored by it. Just how good it is. The quality is amazing. It's immaculate.
I had those, or at least the first couple of books read to me. I distinctly remember my mother reading some C.S. Lewis, those to me. Mm. And then at some point before the seventh grade, so maybe I guess in the sixth grade, I'd read The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings. Mm. Maybe not all Lord of the Rings, though. Maybe I just read The Hobbit and seen the movie of Lord of the Rings, the old, what is it, Bashki?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the old cartoon.
Yeah.
Well, I remember having read the books, and then I went and watched the first Narnia, the BBC Narnia ones.
Yeah. Mm.
Extremely low budget puppeteering, you know, and just thinking, this sucks, you know, I want my book back. I liked it better when I didn't see Mr.
How imagination is finally caught up, you know, or technology's caught up with imagination. That's the way I felt when watching the Peter Jackson Lord of the Rings. I'm like, we have arrived.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Technology has made imagination possible, you know, or whatever.
It did.
I really felt that the Lord of the Rings did a lot of justice to what I thought was all the key moments and best parts of what I remember of Lord of the Rings, the novel. I've read it through 3 or 4 times. I don't think I can read it again for a while still. But the Hobbit movies, I loathe the Hobbit movies.
No, I do not care for them. I don't care for everything they added in there that didn't need to be there. Like that could have been the Hobbit as one movie, and then they could have easily done spinoffs, and people would have still watched them. Many people would have watched them that were going to watch the second book of the Hobbit, or second movie of the Hobbit.
Like the Radagast story with the necromancer and stuff. There could have been two movies for the Hobbit, and then just make that its own movie. It would have been fine.
Yeah. Well. Look, I'm just happy that kind of stuff is out there in the world. And, you know, I think it has exposed people to, you know, our hobby in some ways, you know. And I love the, you know, D&D. And then, God, yes, I'm going to echo Red here. You have to get the Salvatore books.
So I'm reading the Expanse novels at the moment, which... Okay. I got to say, I'm probably the best sci-fi novels I've ever read. It's not the best sci-fi story. That's easily... Yeah, it's got
to
be.
You... to throw that in the trash and learn about the drow.
All right. I'm just for you guys. I'll do it. I can't not now. Red's threatened to vex me from the show.
Oh, man. I would totally vex you. But that's right on it. That's a perfect depiction of exactly what's going to happen. You're going to get vected.
I will say that those books were like very important to me as a kid. Like the three books. What is it? Crystal Shard, Silver Stream.
No,
I can't remember.
No, there's definitely, and I'll pull them up in a second. But I mean, the key thing, to a point here, Adam, is being that like you're going to read this, and maybe at this point you're like, you know, that just doesn't seem like it was as big of a deal, like the story at this point. But you got to, like, this is the book that essentially, if anyone wanted to know how an appropriate D&D story like should go, like that they did a, this is it. The Icewind Dale trilogy is it. And
it really is.
It's a great standard for anyone to like look back and say, man, I like even to tie into it. And there's so much, like it's such a piece of source material that so much has come from it. It really does. It's a centerpiece for an entire base of lore, really.
There's cliffhangers, so there's, you know, absolute amazing characters.
So my favorite author and my favorite story, I guess, is the Magician series by Raymond D. Feist.
I love that. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
That was kind of the first piece of fantasy I read kind of in my teens that I really just went, like, I had sweat patches under my arms. I was like, oh my God, I cannot stop reading this. And I think I inhaled that whole first book with its, I don't know, hundreds and hundreds of pages in under 3 days. I think bang, bang, bang.
The companion series, the one after that on the other side of the rift, was also awesome.
It was all phenomenal. I think it was Janie
something like that. Wurtz,
co-writer
with
Mistress of the Empire and all that, all those ones. But I love that writing, love that story. I got such an attachment to those characters as well, and that's certainly been one of the biggest influences me fantasy wise.
I love some of those situations, the political intrigue where they're forcing things to happen. I don't want to spoil it for anybody who might read it on the back of this, although it's been out forever. I'm still not going to spoil it. There's it's so well written, and you can tell that it started from a game campaign, a D&D campaign.
Yeah, exactly right. He even said the whole thing was based on, he even had to start paying royalties to his the guy. Well, don't quote me on that, but I heard a rumor that he had to start paying royalties to the people who used to do the campaigns with him, because he was just becoming so prolific, and so much of his source material was coming from their interactions.
Mm. Yes. And that's the same way with Forgotten Realms. I mean, like, whatever. Look, we could talk about it.
Yeah, we could. I'm going to get my 2 cents in on where mine started. I mean, to be fair, like my uncle, who happened to only be 3 years older than me, he had a Nintendo. There were games, you know, there were books, like it was all there. Like it all, you know, you remember like the old like Ghosts and Goblins game?
Yes.
Did you ever see that one?
Yes. Yeah. I remember playing many, many hours in a laundromat.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, it's nice to have these mentor figures in your life. I mean, 3 years older than me, he's practically my older brother. And, you know, he had friends who D&D, and that's where I got tagged into Dragonlance and Lord of the Rings and all this. But there was one man, I got to say, like the one that I really like stumbled into myself. Have you ever heard of the Chronicles of Prydain?
I don't think so.
Nah. And so have you ever heard of Lloyd Alexander?
I don't think so.
Right. And so, like, I tell you what, I think I was in maybe first grade or something in the library, and I come across these books, and I have no clue what I'm looking at. And they're old books, like second edition. The book was originally written in the 60s kind of deal. Like, I don't even know what I'm looking at. And anyways, the librarian, I don't think she even knew what I was looking at. She lets me walk out with these books. And so do you ever see that really bad, bad movie, The Black Cauldron?
That is not a bad movie. And you hush your mouth. The Horned King is one of the scariest Disney things ever. It's an amazing story of sacrifice and darkness. There's an army of the dead in that Disney movie.
There is. And guess what? That's these books that I read when I was in first grade.
It's pretty scary.
Black Cauldron is the second of 5 books. And I read all 5 books around that time. And it's like you guys. That was the doorway that I walked through, and I never stopped reading after that. And The Chronicles of Prydain, it's written back in the 60s, written by someone who, just like Tolkien and C.S. Lewis, influenced by, you know, the great struggle, also, you know, World War II and everything that built into that. And you can read that kind of stuff based, like you said, you know, it was a Disney movie that had an army of undead and this craziness that the books were, there was so much to it that, like, as a kid, just trying to process it, it was actually pretty amazing stuff for me. And I still think it has so much to it that it's pretty remarkable stuff. And I'd recommend anybody to look it up. The Chronicles of Prydain, Prydain. If you're sitting out there and you're looking for some new books, again, you know, there's some younger material to it, but it was pretty remarkable stuff. And it's got a lot of, he tied in a lot of like Welsh mythology to it.
I didn't know that was part of a trilogy. I mean, I didn't know. I mean, I'm very familiar, obviously, with the Black Cauldron And
yeah,
but I did not know it was part of a series of things and wasn't kind of its own, yeah, just own thing.
Five whole books, man. It's amazing stuff. Highly recommend it. It's remarkable.
Yeah, neat. Well, look, we've certainly jumped around, but you know, whatever. You know, it's nice to have this chat every now and then. Let's take a break. We'll have a vendor segment and then come back and we will talk about actual 40K. Maybe. See you in a minute.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey everybody, welcome to a sponsor spotlight segment. My name is Paul Murphy. I'm joined this afternoon by Jay Larson.
Hey Paul, how are you doing?
Jay, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, you bet. Thank you for having me on.
People hear the Discount Games ad in the show. That's your ad.
Yes, that's correct. Awesome. Well, I appreciate you having me on.
Well, this is, we're at the end of the year, and man, what a year it's been, like, to put it mildly.
That is fair, yeah.
So what's it been like, you know, I guess just as a game store owner, web store, I mean, same thing, but you also have a, you know, brick and mortar presence, and you know, what's it been like?
It's been, you know, it's been kind of crazy. So I'm in Idaho, and in, you know, it is, I think March is when we did our stay at home order. You know, during that, I ended up, I have a wonderful staff that helps make the machine purr at our business. And, you know, when the stay at home order came in, it basically switched to, okay, I'm going to be the person going in, you know, placing restock orders, receiving orders, and shipping everything out all on my own, because, you know, obviously there's not going to be any social distancing issues for me being in my store alone, getting orders put out. And so, that felt a lot like back when I started the business and I was on my own. Things have grown a bit since I started things, it's probably been, you know, 14, 15 years ago that I started my business. And so that was a lot to take care of, but we got through it, and now I've been trying with my we do have our store open now, and you know, people can come in and, you know, shop around, buy things. We're not hosting events or doing stuff like that yet, but you know, obviously we're looking forward to when we can do that again.
Man, I just want to go to a concert. You know,
I want to go to a con. Like I used
well,
to.
Well, yeah, con too. Yeah, look, I'm, but I understand. Like, I'm not trying to accelerate the process either. I just those are the things I long for. When it is safe and when we can do it,
right.
I'm really looking forward to doing that kind of stuff.
It is kind of funny to look back at like the way that we lived our lives before this, and like I would probably go to, you know, maybe 5, 6, 7 gaming conventions a year previously. And it was just kind of expected that you were going to go to a con and you're going to catch con crud and, you know, you'd bounce back from it and it'd be fine. And it seemed like, I don't know, it seemed like such a carefree, naive time almost.
Yeah. You see people in television shows now where there's 100 people in a 6-foot square.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
Like, oh my goodness. Don't they know? Like, oh, this is actually a 10-year-old program.
Right. Yeah.
Oh man. But I look forward, but it's nice that you get some of the foot traffic or people kind of, you know, whether getting back to some little bit of normalcy with being able to come and browse, you know, a shelf, interact with the store clerk. Yeah.
Right. This is maybe going to sound a little bit hokey or, you know, whatever, but one of the reasons why I've loved my business, I've loved my job, love our customers, is because I am a gamer myself and gaming is an important part of my life. And I've always kind of felt like, you know, there's lots of things I could do to make a buck, but you know, like, I feel like I make people's lives better by selling them games.
Yeah. Oh.
And I've never felt that more so than this year, because there's, you know, honestly, there's a lot of people where, you know, that game purchase or that book they buy or that miniature that they're going to assemble and paint is something that's helping them get through a tough time. And so I'm grateful that, you know, I get to have that feeling as I'm doing this job.
Have you noticed a change in pattern about what types of games people are buying? Have like a bunch of two-player games, you know, gone on the rise? There's been some of that.
One of the, definitely during the lockdown period, there was just a ton of hobby supplies that were going out the door. And that's actually something that I'm really excited about as well with, you know, when game nights restart or when start doing conventions again, getting to see some of the pandemic armies that people have worked on, I think is going to be a lot of fun.
Exactly. I know I painted a few things during this time period. Yeah, it was great for getting the Indominus box set all ready to go.
Yeah.
There's some upsides to this, but I think that, or I should say there was ways to make it not seem so bad, but not everybody has this escape. You know, it's been a difficult time. Like you see, you know, like polls and stuff, like some people just thrive in like a non-work from home environment. Some people have to get out and do some of these things. And so I completely understand how some people are feeling about this. And it just seems like, you know, maybe as we crest into this new year, we have some positive news out there for potential solutions. Yeah. Maybe that, maybe we're almost on the other side of it.
Yeah. I mean, it's nice to be able to feel some hope.
But I was curious, you know, like the games that people are buying, or was it like things where did you like for family oriented type games, where they're, you know, maybe less strategy, but more just kind of, you know, games you could just check your mind out on Uno.
Yeah. I mean, this has been kind of a, I guess, continuation of a trend, but, I guess one genre that has been growing and I think has continued to grow during this has been role-playing games. You know, stuff like Critical Role has obviously been important in getting lots of different people excited for D&D and stuff like that. But I know for myself and as an example, it's been quite a while since I've done a regular role-playing campaign because life has just been so busy, etc. But when the lockdown was coming to an end, I was like, I'm not having any type of gaming experiences, and it's just something that I need back in my life. And I started doing a Zoom role-playing game with like a friend that's in Seattle, Los Angeles, Denver, and Madison, Wisconsin. And so, you know, it's cool that without the pandemic, that wouldn't have happened. And it's given me a chance. A lot of them are friends that I usually see at conventions. And so it gave me a chance to still be able to do stuff with them. I ran them through the entire massive Nyarlathotep Call of Cthulhu.
That sounds fun.
Adventure. And that was a lot of fun. And now we're doing the Alien role-playing game. One of the other guys is running us through that. So that's something that's been fun. And it is something it does seem like there's been a fair number of people who have taken an increased interest in that genre of games.
Oh, heck yeah. I mean, and obviously people know you probably stock Games Workshop stuff, but I guess maybe if they didn't know before, you also stock other things. So on your website, other board games, other miniature games, role-playing games and stuff, you kind of are a one-stop shop for all gaming-related needs. That's neat, man. Well, look, it's, you know, one of the things that I know I've taken a lot of joy in this is the games, is the hobby, and then interacting with people with these electronic formats. And I know, like, heck, I've even been a part of a couple of, you know, virtual con experiences. And, you know, I think that's just what we kind of have to do. What's neater about it is that we actually have the option to do it now. Like, technology is helping us stay together. And, you know, like social media, you know, Twitter and Instagram specifically, you know, you can kind of interact with folks in a way and kind of help, you know, maybe cultivate what you need, you know, at whatever point you need and what you're going through. It's nice.
Yeah.
It's nice. So have you been able to keep up like with stock and things? I know supply chains have been impacted.
Sure. So, you know, it's been a struggle. And I I'm appreciative to, you know, our customers being understanding, because it is, you know, everyone's trying to do their best, and it's not where we want things to be. But, you know, I also appreciate, so as obviously your listeners are interested in Games Workshop, and it's difficult or it's frustrating when, you know, like they've had some releases where, you know, they said, okay, you can, these new releases, you can order two of each of the new releases, which doesn't stretch very far. And, you know, that, it kind of sucks, et cetera. But on the other hand, I also, like, I appreciate that Games Workshop is making decisions to try to keep their warehouse safe and try to take care of their employees.
Yeah, absolutely. And
so, you know, that's got to be, you know, we have to have, kind of have a balancing act of, you know, we need to still be able to, you know, I still want to be able to ship you guys stuff, but, you know, I appreciate everyone being understanding that, you know, the kind of the well-oiled machine that Games Workshop had built itself up to is kind of struggling to keep up with demand now, because there's, you know, they're operating their warehouses with social distancing and, you know, stuff like that. And so yeah. I've, you know, there have been points where I've had, last week I think I had three or four restock orders that were all pending that I, you know, placed over the course of various weeks. And the nice thing is that they ended up, they did like a big burst of shipments to me, and so got a bunch of stuff in all at once. But it is, I do feel like, for, you know, as big of a challenge as they've had, I feel like Games Workshop is doing the best that they can with a really difficult situation, because the reality is that, like, they're this multi-billion-dollar company that has, you know, there's just a huge demand for their product, and they're doing their best to keep up with that demand, but, you know, people love their games. And
yeah, well, no, look, that's having that that understanding is big, because yeah, we want it, but yeah, we're all kind of in this. We're all feeling the same kind of resource lag, is what it is. It's a lag. It's an impact to the whole supply chain. But hey, look, man, I'm hoping that, you know, our listeners are still showing you some support, and then
yeah, they've been great.
Are also understanding when, and I have to imagine that they are, because, you know, it's everywhere. But I also understand it's real frustrating when you
when
you really need that miniature.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I will say that I feel like our stock levels have been doing, you know, surprisingly well. For, you know, if sometimes stuff will be out of stock a little bit longer than I would like, but a lot of times it does eventually end up getting back and getting available. So,
all right, man. Well, Jay, where can people find you?
Go to discountgamesinc.com. And one other thing I wanted to say real quick was that, you know, another exciting thing we had happen this year is we had kind of an emergency relaunch of our website, and the old website had kind of gotten to the point where it was just a really difficult user experience. The website was unresponsive, difficult to use, et cetera, and not the type of experience that we wanted to have. And so if anyone has had kind of that experience in the past and were kind of frustrated, come back if you can and give us a chance. And I think that you'll be a lot happier with the current experience that we're trying to provide. And I guess one last pitch as well is that shoot me an email at j@discountgamesinc.com, and I can give you some info on how you can save even more money than the prices we have listed on the website.
Well, I mean, what's not to like about that?
That's right. Yeah.
Well, it is always a pleasure talking with you. Please check out his site. And yeah, we'll connect again real soon.
Awesome. Thanks a lot.
We'll see you.
You're listening to Forge the Narrative.
Hey, everybody, we are back. Thanks for supporting our sponsors, and thanks for listening to us. And heck, if you made it this far, you deserve that thanks. it is so, that is actually one of the coolest things about like our culture as nerds, is that when we discover that there's a gap in the knowledge of another kindred spirit, then we almost feel compelled to plug that in, you know?
It's actually quite unique, isn't it? Because in a lot of other cultures, people would lord it over each other, having more knowledge of a scene or more knowledge or better exposure to something. But in ours, we're like, if you haven't read this, read this. You haven't seen this, see this. Everyone just wants to share what they love.
That's it. That is one of the best things just about our culture and spirit as a group of enthusiasts for this type of thing is that we're very keen to share novels and books and authors and characters. And I try to not share stories of like my game characters with people, but I know I'm guilty of it.
As in your little fluff pieces?
What
Red's going to get his son to ride for him soon.
I've got this 14th level ranger and I'm multi-classed into cleric because I needed this one thing. And then I did this, I try to to not share those stories, but I will talk about them if anyone needs to or would like to talk about it.
Please.
Yeah, and tell you what, that's actually a good segue. The holidays can be difficult, and especially with people separated from maybe families or whatever, their social groups. Hit us up in chat. I'd love to hear about your third level ranger or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
Whatever. Amen. Twitter, Instagram, the Facebook page. Yeah, well, we're down to chat about that kind of stuff. So, doubly so through these kind of weird times. But I'd like to think there's some hope and we're getting to the other end of it.
Yeah, I agree. I think hopefully it's not much longer now. But I mean, we were saying that in July. So it just is what it is. It's gonna go for as long as it goes, and let's just all stay the course, help each other along.
That's actually the thing. Right. If we just do what needs to be done, then it gets over quicker, and then we get to cut. But that doesn't mean that everyone is not dealing with it in their own way. And if one of those ways where you feel like chat, interact, swap list ideas, hit us up. Happy to talk about whatever. And speaking of list swaps, I know I'm breaking my rule of too many frequent segues, but it can be horrifying when you post a list on the internet.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, especially on some of the bigger, Comp 40K, the Facebook page, that can be a daunting cesspool. I mean, I think we were talking before about how things used to be like Daka Daka and Warseer, and you could post up a list and this is amazing, this is incredible. Or people are like, someone posted this up last week, you're a noob, and what are you talking about?
Yeah, well, I think whenever you put, there's enough variation in the game. And then plus also we're not getting to play as much. So, like say when your list goes up on the Warhammer community page and then people have comments.
Who did that happen to?
Yeah. What's this amazing circumstance?
Well, it was actually pretty neat. They posted this article that had a focus on narrative, a focus on the models themselves, and then competition. And they posted that Blood Angel list with a couple alterations that we've been talking about on air, as a competition side. So it's really nice to get the opportunity to do that. And the criticism that I got was that people didn't like the choice of Mephiston in the list.
I agree. Just because you're writing a competitive list doesn't mean you need to take the best choice for everything. You can still be like, I just like Mephiston, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, if you're at a point where you're debating 150 points out of a 2,000 point list, I think that's actually a healthy spot for a list. And there are times when we get a lot of list questions about help me boil all the fat out of this list. Now that's not exactly what they say. A lot of times you get lists to review, and what people want you to do is confirm their choices. They don't actually want criticism. They want you to be like, your list is freaking amazing, and go forth and slay, my friend.
Yeah, they want echo chamber.
Yeah. And that's not what we do when lists get bounced to us. So one of the first questions I ask is, are you making a model? Are you making any modeling decisions here? Are you making any deal? Do you only happen to own a Land Raider, Prometheus, or something, and that's what you want to use? Or you just love the model, that kind of stuff. Those are all fine constraints, I think, to work around. I happen to love Mephiston. I happen to also think that his ability to deny things and also be a really dangerous combat threat is something that appeals to me, and I'm going to use him whenever I can. If there's a slight, in me analyzing it, as I think the advantages to using anything other than him is not enough for me to not want to use him. Yep. Is that making sense?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense. 100%. Absolutely makes sense to me, man. I called a tournament on the weekend as a one day kind of invite only masters, like best of the state of Queensland in Australia. Their best eight players played off in an RTT to see who was the best of the year. It was a bit smaller than usual because it's a smaller year. But they had one guy there playing a very strong Iron Hands list with a Land Raider Achilles. And to me, that was the story of the event. Every time we were talking about who was doing well, we were talking about, holy crap, no one has managed to kill this Land Raider Achilles yet. This is incredible. Like, a revolution is occurring before our eyes. Everybody, dust them off. Get them off the shelf. And that was just because he loved the model and was one of the first things he ever bought as a kid. And he plays with it at every turn. And this guy was kicking up. And just because he takes one model because it's his preference, because he loves it. And he took it with an Ironstone and with a techie to auto-heal it three wounds. So, you know, he put some points into making it go. But it's still a freaking Land Raider in ninth edition where people think, oh, they're just useless.
Yeah. So he did well with it. I was making a joke about the Land Raider going in a list. But look, if you actually buy a Land Raider and you put it together and you want to use it, I'm not going to tell you not to do it.
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing I'd like to see our community, and this is me soapboxing a little bit. It's something I'd like to see our community do less. Don't tell people they're wrong for taking the things that they like. Ask them why they take them.
So there could be different, two different things. Like, there are people that have no attachment at all. Like, I want to know what is mathematically superior to everything else. And that's okay. That is okay. But then even then, see, that's when I start getting subjective. Is like, do I need to be to the factor of one at all times, or can I get by with 1.25 and still feel better about my role, my play experience, my travel, my whatever my investment is? And I think that is also okay, because at some point you have to, like, a little bit of die roll and a lot of player skill comes in, and I feel like I can compensate for maybe a little bit worse of a list choice, or maybe some poor rolling or whatever with skill. But not everybody wants to do that, or even cares. Ask them. I think going at it is about why you took things. And now look, with the way it was framed, I'm not saying that the comments rolling, why would you take Mephisto? Well, because he's amazing. That's why I take him. But he's also not that bad.
Yeah, and just because something is slightly better than something doesn't mean it automatically invalidates all other options. Like you said, the fact is, Mephiston's a beat stick. It's very hard to get a caster who's also as good of a beat stick as him. They have to look at a Demon Prince to get anything comparable.
Yeah, and Blood Angels do not get a Demon Prince.
Turns out. I mean, Libby Dreads, almost there.
That's it. I think that's really the only choice you can make is a Libby Dread, is if you take that or not. And that is actually very incredibly powerful. But look, man, I'm actually happy to engage in those discussions. So keep it coming. But, you know, I definitely know why people may not be so keen to post their list because of that side of things. But I think where you post it and who you interact with on that, you would definitely want to get what you want out of it and not just what they want to give you. I mean, like, I don't think anyone wants to hear, you know, that their choice of character or whatever is not what they want, unless that's what they want. Tell me what to do. Take the super chaplain and shut up, you know. You know what I mean? But that's interesting thought exercise. And then seeing how people respond to this kind of thing. And it's the internet is an interesting place.
Yes, it is. Very interesting. I mean, I'm with you guys in regards that, because, you know, you played, so you choose to play Mephisto, and I choose to play, you know, entire army of Khorne Berserkers. And like, so I'm used to people saying, well, why not this or that? Or doesn't this just seem more optimal? And I can wholeheartedly agree. Yep, that seems way more optimal, but it's not like the story thing that I'm driven by in some cases. And I acknowledge that I'm definitely playing, quote unquote, with a handicap, but I'm having a blast doing it. And I think that there's a lot to that in people playing their own game. And so a lot of times when people show me stuff and ask me what I think, a lot of it, you know, I might give some constructive criticism in certain regards that, well, if you want to, I think that this might be better or what have you. But at the same time, like, I can't really, a lot of times, you talk about a Land Raider Achilles or something. I mean, I've seen it on the table a couple times. I can't say that I've played against one recently. It's really hard for someone to judge something without having kind of seen it play itself out a bit. There's some things that, sure, you can make a call and say, well, I don't think that's going to go well. But at the same time, I mean, it just doesn't necessarily mean it will or won't. A lot of it does take we've talked about, you know, piloting skill and understanding how and when to make the right decisions for the right reasons. And sometimes those interesting builds and in the list and what, you know, different synergies that can be achieved, you can do what you want to certain extents. And I think that that's kind of the great thing that we've talked about in regards to ninth edition, is that it's not just this beat stick concept. There's a lot of other ways to achieve the win. And so it kind of allows for a little more flexibility, which I've really appreciated recently.
And probably just like you read, and then Adam's buddy with the Land Raider, you know, like, you could, what is it? What's the term for breaking down a rifle?
Disassemble.
Yeah. Thanks.
No problem. I'm here.
You could disassemble that rifle with a blindfold on, probably at this point.
Yeah.
You know? And there's something to be said about that, knowing the exact time to bust out that stratagem, knowing what it is or whatever, and what your thing is capable of doing. There's some value in that, I have to imagine.
Well, this Land Raider Achilles did not die in the entire tournament, and I just thought that was the craziest thing I've ever seen.
So do you think that's because that, I mean, anything he was particularly doing, because everyone talks about, well, don't take anything because the eradicators are going to get you. Was there a lack of eradicators, or did the eradicators just not?
Well, he played into things that are worse, I think. He played into a guy who was taking 25 Admic breaches, which I think it's dead turn one. Doesn't get to hit, doesn't get to do anything. It's just going to explode. But no, he played it really well. And on top of that, like I said, he took things to ensure he was going to get some value out of it. Things to reduce damage, things to give it an invuln. And I'm sorry, it already comes with an invuln, but you know what I mean? Things to ensure the investment was going to get some mileage. And yeah, in some games, it just clubbed. I mean, he didn't win all his games by any means, but he was competitive and the thing didn't die. And I thought that was the biggest story of the event.
I mean, because again, you know, I shouldn't say all we've heard. All the, you know, a lot of armchair generals have been about, you know, don't take anything with a vehicle body because of this. That's it.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, look at the, yeah, exactly. Eradicators and ATVs will skip. No, I mean, they're definitely there. Don't get me wrong. Eradicators and ATVs are present, but that's definitely not a reason to discount the vehicles that you want to bring. For sure. Yeah.
Mm. All right. Well, this is neat. So I'd love to hear about more off the wall list. I shouldn't even characterize it as off the wall list. I would like to hear about things that are performing, what maybe punching above their weight kind of thing.
Yeah. Let's talk about what, you know, you out there are running that you might think that others aren't thinking about, because I think there's a lot of interest in those divergent opinions.
Yeah, well, my biggest one at the moment, I think the biggest faction I have at the moment that is still seeming unexplored is Necrons. I don't know if there's a bad choice in Necrons. Maybe they're Canoptic Reanimators. Maybe they're the bad choice. But I think there's a place for just about everything in that book, and so much of it is still unexplored. It's such an exciting time for Necron players, I think.
I think there might even be, it might be tough, but I think that there still might even be a place for the Reanimators. It's just how you play it, right? I mean, especially you go back to the terrain discussion we were having before the show, and those Reanimators can hide behind those 5-foot abstract, you know, infinitely tall building. So five inches.
It's true.
There we go.
Actually, very true.
Next week, we will talk about off-the-wall list concepts and designs.
Sounds awesome.
We'll do a year-end retrospective. Let's nominate like a model to the Hall of Fame or something like that next week also.
Sounds good.
I mean, we'll make it up
as we
go.
Yeah, sounds good to me. Because, you know, we never do that otherwise.
Right. Well, again, I really appreciate everyone hanging in with us this long. Tune in next week. We are going to have shows going, you know, through the end of this year and into the next. Hit us up in chat on anywhere that you see us. We're going to bring you more info about the Nopen. We're closing this year out, yes, but we are ramping up into some truly exciting times.
Can't wait.
See everybody.
Looking forward to it. See ya.
Make my day.